choices you make with your lifestyle, your money, every single day, influence your future. It is time to fight to make it better. This podcast is dedicated to you, to sharing ideas that you can use to take ownership of your financial future. Most Americans have little or no net worth. By being purposeful with what we earn, I know we can change that, and we must change that. I want you to learn this game. I want you to be better educated about your money. I want you to live a better life. Welcome to Money is Personal, the Briggs Financial Podcast. Let's go! Salutations, greetings, and hello! My name is Stephen Briggs. I am chairperson and CEO of Briggs Financial Incorporated. Welcome to Money is Personal, episode number 152, Food for Thought. When it comes to the household and spending, there are few places that as a planning firm, we find more opportunities working with households across the spectrum, doesn't matter of income level, wealth level, what have you, than food. And there's good reason for that, because statistically, when it comes to what the cost centers are of an entire household, it really, you know, yeah, there are gradations or variations on certain aspects of the pie, but overall, it's fairly consistent regardless what income tranche you're in. The main cost center that a lot of people in this country, you know, in terms of where your money goes, is housing. That's first and foremost. But the kick with housing is that the housing market is a fairly efficient vehicle in that if someone lowers rent, it kind of forces others to do the same. If someone raises rent, things kind of move that direction as well. Supply and demand of the housing market's responsive to, in a lot of ways, to the locality in which you're living. So there just isn't a whole lot of negotiating room short of changing your family structure, such as, you know, having a friend move in with you, that type of thing that can change that dynamic. But housing for, you know, across households is literally one third of average expenditures in the United States. And I'm using, in case you're wondering, I'm using 2022 Bureau of Labor Statistics studies and Federal Reserve studies to support these numbers. That's where this stuff comes from. So you're going, where is he rattling this information from? From government reports that have studied, you know, consistently grabbed that data and are studying this issue. So one third of the share of average expenditures of a household is housing. So right off the bat, you've got that. The second one is transportation. 16.8%. And then comes food, 12.8%. And what's interesting to me is we look at other ones such as healthcare and entertainment, far lower, 8 and 4.7% respectively. And then there's a category called other expenditures, which is 12.3%, just a bit less than food. But what's considered other expenditures? Alcoholic beverages, apparel and services, personal care products and services, reading, education, tobacco and smoking supplies, cash contributions, and miscellaneous. So all the other things that are not literally and specifically food amount on average to less than what the food category is by itself. So when we look at opportunities, it's not that those other things may not experience, you know, may not need some scrutiny, but there's a lot of, and this isn't to say, don't look at your subscription services and cut ones you don't need. Don't, you know, no, you do want to do those things. But I think a lot of people hyperfixate on that because it's an easy win. And in many cases, if you go from 5 streaming services to 2 streaming services, the feeling is negligible. But where I find that people get a bit tighter, a bit feel more challenged, is the idea of changing the mix with respect to food spending. And I'm going to illuminate why in a second. There's another table in the BLS report that talks that breaks out food away, you know, at home versus away from home. And what's interesting to me is that if we take a look at, and it's all but the basically the third quintile of Americans. And it's, so it's broken down into quintiles or 20 percentiles, essentially. So you have the bottom 20%, the second 20%, the third 20%, and so on. What's interesting is to me statistically is the middle 20% spend about, you'd sit there and say basically two-thirds eating at home and about one-third eating away from home. And that is what, if you want to know what middle America is, by average, two-thirds eating at home, one-third eating away from home. In every other quintile, particularly interesting to me, the next lowest quintile and the two above it, is we're eating away from home is a larger expense than eating at home. Now, the second quintile, I think that's the case because there's some probably some government subsidy that pays for a portion of the at home versus away from home. And it's fairly, it's basically a 40-60 split. In the fourth quintile, or you're talking the top 60 to 80%, so these are people who are making more money. And I'll explain what these dollar amounts are in a minute. So, but you've got basically almost a 50-50 split. Like, it leans towards eating away from home, but it's basically, like, I would say 45% at home, 55% away from home. You get to the highest quintile, top 20%. And, you know, basically 80 to 85% of where they spend is eating away from home. They actually do less grocery shopping and less eating at home than the average American household. So even though they're making considerably more money, they're spending a lot more money. By the way, in terms of quantity, how much more money? That highest quintile spends on average 50% more than the middle quintile. So that upper tranche is consuming a lot more. And a lot more is paying for the service of having food brought to it. So it's not like they're eating more food, but they're having a lot more of it prepared for them. In that fourth quintile, they're spending 20-25% more on food. And that spend is almost entirely in the away from home category. Like the difference between the middle 20% and the next 20% above, 40 to 60% versus 60 to 80%, is it almost exclusively. In fact, it is exclusively away from home. And in fact, the amount spending at home decreases between the middle and the middle upper class, basically. And that's an interesting dynamic. There's a shift there. And part of that might be household and family size, where especially if you've got kids, you're probably doing that more out of convenience and schedule sake to a degree. Part of that might be financial permission, or there may be a pull or a desire to be more Instagram trendy. I go to the fancy restaurants, I get the fancy coffee, I've got this, I've got that, and I got to show my friends that I'm wealthy. And people in many ways do that by sharing photos of where they've been on Facebook or Instagram or TikTok or whatever. Look at this fancy food I've got in front of me. Now, I admit I am also one who shares fancy food pictures on his social media, but it's all stuff I've cooked. It's very rarely something that I've gotten at a restaurant. Quite the opposite. I love to cook at home. And so for me, in terms of my personal persuasion, that's I love sharing. Here's this latest thing you can cook at home. But that's just it. It's a good chunk of middle America, they're not going out that much compared to their household spend. But as that income increases, there's a risk permission. Something happens where we decide that we don't need to or do not want to cook at home anymore. And some of that may also be if you're high earning, maybe you're traveling a lot for work, maybe you're at work just way more than you're at home. Okay, this isn't to judge. But it is to say that we run into a number of people in that middle, upper class America that have the time and just don't want to cook. I don't want to do that. So I eat out. But the kick is this. When you eat out, you're not eating more food than anybody else. You're not getting more nutrients than someone else. You are paying for the convenience of having someone prepare that food for you. So when we see budgets that grossly exceed, you know, and we see those increases in spend and it goes well above and beyond need, and this is like the first major cost center you can do a whole lot with right away, obviously it becomes a target for focusing on financial planning, because housing, for example, probably pretty fixed. Transportation, I mean, if you've got an $800 a month car payment, you probably don't need it. You can probably do something about that. But usually, especially the way financing is today, that decision really happens during that purchasing moment. Refinancing a car loan, possible, but not terribly likely you're actually going to see actual cost savings doing that, short of rolling up the existing car loan into a new one and trying to lower the monthly payment, which some people do, and sometimes it makes a lot of sense. But this is the next lowest hanging fruit, and it's the biggest one, and it's not close. What you do with your food matters. How, you know, play with your food. How you use your money to consume matters. Because if you're able to take even a couple $100 a month and transfer it out of the eating out category and put that back in your pocket, that's a major difference. It can result in hundreds of thousands of dollars of investment savings between now and retirement just by taking a couple $100 that was going to anywhere from McDonald's to like I said, your fanciest dinner night ever. And if you can cut a couple of those experiences back, you can put yourself in a much stronger long-term financial position. And this isn't even getting into things like coupon cutting and really adopting a home for food lifestyle. But it is to say, you know, there's a lot of that quick gratification, quick satisfaction element that goes on. And that's the thing. In most cases, when we're working with clients, again, it isn't $300 dinners that tends to kill them. It's these gas station trips. I had to grab a soda here, a this, there, or whatever. $10 here, $15 there. Well, if you do that once or twice a day, God forbid you do it twice a day at $15 a pop. Let's say you go to Starbucks, you get your coffee, your breakfast sandwich, you tip, it's $15. You go back for lunch, it's Jimmy John's, it's whatever the people want in the office. And now you're at $30, $35 a day. That's almost $1,000 a month. $1,000 a month post-tax. Meaning you had to work to earn anywhere from $15,000 to $20,000 worth of pre-tax wages to get to that number to go out and do that thing. And my question to you simply is that how you want your money spent? Is that what you want to work so hard to earn? Is that worth it? Now, if it is, I think the argument's done. I'm probably not going to be terribly helpful with the rest of this. You can shut this episode off and we can be done with the matter. But assuming you're looking at going, holy crap, yeah, that's a lot of money. What do I do? Well, you go, well, obviously the answer is, well, don't do that. Not doing that's hard, though. And it's hard for a couple of reasons. One, it requires you to break a habit that you currently have, and it's entrenched in your lifestyle. And that's the kick. This isn't a budgetary problem. People think, when they get into New Year's resolutions, they go, I gotta get a budget, and then I'm going to save money. No one makes a spending decision because their budget says so. Haven't met them, and when questioning it, pressing, okay, but how are you really doing that? Because it's not the budget. I don't think, oh, my Excel sheet says I can have a coffee today. No. I want a coffee. I'm going to have a coffee. I get up every morning. I make coffee. Why? I'm going to wake up. It's my routine. As I sip on my coffee while recording a podcast. So it comes down to habits. It comes down to a lifestyle. And so in order to change the spending behavior, you have to change your lifestyle, which means you have to have an attitude about your lifestyle that says, you know, I want to live with a smaller footprint. If your attitude is, I want to live with a smaller footprint and save more money, then your behavior is, I need to go out less. Well, in order to go out less, what do you have to do? You have to prepare more at home. Now, there are ways you can prepare and still enjoy life. If you're a big breakfast sandwich person, instead of spending, you know, $4 at the shop or $5 at the shop for a breakfast sandwich, scale that back. Let's do a do this, not that. Get some Jimmy Dean sandwiches you can stick in your freezer at home. When you want one, you pop one in, and you're not looking at some massive cost that way. Like, it's not costless. It's not as cheap as like buying oatmeal, but it's a whole lot cheaper than going and getting them freshly made. Heck, I'm looking here right now at my local grocer. They have you can get them in a 4-pack or an 8-pack, it looks like. We're economical here. We'll go with the 8-pack. And an 8-pack here of Jimmy Dean sausage, egg, and cheese croissant sandwiches goes for normally $12.49 on sale this week, folks, for $10.49. Well, if I take that $10.49 and I divide it by 8, boy, I get $1.31. If every time you wanted a breakfast sandwich, instead of spending $4, you spend $1.31, it's $2.69. Multiply that by 5, multiply that, and that's 5 days a week, let alone if you do it 7. I'm just talking the work week. Just switching that up is $57 a month. That's $685, almost $700 a year. Almost $700 a year for if you're willing to eat some Jimmy Dean breakfast sandwiches instead of that. Now, but wait, there's more, because if it's about, you know, $58 or so a month, and you were to go ahead and take that, and let's say we earn on that an 8% return, and you put in $60 at the beginning of each month, and you do that for the next 30 years, that is $85,000 in your pocket at an 8% return. At an S&P average 10%, historic average of a 10% rate of return, it's $125,000. $125,000 for your future self because you switched off from the Starbucks sandwiches to the Jimmy Dean. That's how stupid simple this can get. That's how easy this can get. Just by trading stuff out, you're not, I mean, let's be honest, they're microwaving or toasting your sandwich over there. You just toast your sandwich at home and walk away with $125,000. Sounds like a game show, doesn't it? That's life. It's taking your money, sticking it in a broadly invested S&P index fund, and letting that thing run up. Let alone if that's longer. If that thing's sitting, let's say, Roth IRA, you're in your mid-30s, and you make that change, that's $250,000, and it's tax-free if it's sitting in a Roth. Oh. That's how much little decisions like that you're making now can have such an outsized impact on final outcome. And that's one change. Now imagine another change like, hey, how about that $3 or $4 coffee? Can you make it at home? Put it in a tumbler, bring it in? You can buy some of the best beans in the world. Grind them. Make a pot of coffee. Take that pot of coffee, a whole pot, put it in your tumbler, and you're still going to save 50 to 75%. Off of buying a single venti at your local coffee shop. It may be Starbucks or whatever. And see, when I get gas station coffee, it's $1. Okay. So you'll pay about the same, get better coffee. But but bottom line, I would say one, get better coffee, and then two. But I'm saying if you're paying that $3, $4, $5, $6 plus a beverage, stop it. You don't need that. If you don't have, you know, millions of dollars saved for your future right now, you don't need it. You do need to save for your future. You do not need frou-frou coffee every day. Now, that said, does that mean never have a frou-frou coffee? No. I occasionally, and it's really occasionally, because I used to be the Starbucks 5-day a week guy. So if anyone's thinking, oh, Briggs is sitting high on his stuff, oh no, go back to 2015. I was pounding the Starbucks 4 or 5 days a week, and I was spending boatloads. I didn't even know how much I was spending. And I didn't know how much I was spending to the point where when I did my taxes at the end of that year, and I looked at my Amex statement, said I had $1,700 in Starbucks spend. Now, since 2010, I was a gold card carrying, gold star, hero, of the Star Points Rewards, whatever, Starbucks thing. Because they used to, back in 2010, they used to get, in 2009, they would give gold cards to people when you hit your gold status at Starbucks. They don't do that anymore. Still have that thing, by the way. Definitely not a gold member anymore. I go maybe once or twice a year. But back then, I didn't. I was going 5 days a week. And I didn't, you know, and what was really confuddling to me, going back $1,700 for that year for Starbucks, is that I didn't think I spent $1,700. And the reason why I didn't think I spent $1,700 in the year is because I had an auto reload for $50 a month. So 50 times 12 is 600. 600 is definitely not 1,700. 600 is not 1,700. So what happened? Well, I'd go and get my $50 reload and go to Starbucks, and then I would run out of money. And I would not figure this out ahead of time. I would figure this out in line. So what do you do when you're in line and you don't have money? You reload on your phone. Do you remember what you did? Tapped on your phone? Of course not. Why? It's a surface of glass. There is no muscle memory. There is no pulling the money out of your wallet. There's no real tactile experience. And we do lots of things on our phones every day. So it's just another thing you do on your phone. See how insidious this gets, by the way? And here's the other thing. There's also a bit of peer pressure, because if there's a line, you've got your stanchion that's up, and you know, we're up in stanchion. And have you ever seen someone leave the line of a Starbucks because they did not have the money to pay for it? I've never seen it in all my years and all my time standing in all those freaking lines, which, by the way, holy mackerel, why did I spend so much time sitting in queue for a thing? Like cattled in the abattoir or something. But abattoir, by the way, is slaughterhouse. Like cattle, you know, I think about it that way now and I go, man, I was just standing there. Yeah, I was just standing there queuing up every day. Queuing up every day. But no, I had never seen someone leave the line. Never. Never saw someone go, well, I don't have enough money today, and walk out. And that's the point. The point is, it is a trap. The point is that in order for me, you know, when that was such an eye-opener, it was right before I became a financial planner. But I like to say that I don't like that my money got spent that way. So what I did as a means of curbing that was I said, you know, for 2016, I will go to Starbucks 2 days a week. When I go, I will get a dark coffee that I can refill. I would even get a reusable mug. I get one of their ceramic mugs so I could reuse it. And I'm going to get a bagel and cream cheese, and that'll be my morning. And I'm going to spend 3 to 4 hours working on correspondence and marketing and research and, you know, stuff I can do off the public Wi-Fi. But bottom line is I'm there to work, and I'm not, you know, and I'll do that thing. And 2 days a week, Tuesday, Thursday. So I would go in Tuesdays and Thursdays, and that was a habit, and I really enjoyed it. And then I got to the end of 2016, my spend was a lot lower. But the other thing I noticed is that I just wasn't as enthusiastic about going to Starbucks anymore. Because what had just happened is I had taken something that I had been using as a sort of band-aid, sort of an emotional pick-me-up. I said, no more band-aid. I'm just going to go because I want to go. And when I took it out of that context, I realized it wasn't as much fun as I thought it would be. I wasn't enjoying it as much anymore. And I was I was figuring out that there were other things I enjoyed doing more. There were also a realization that maybe the things that were stressing me out were things that I could control and do something about, and Starbucks wasn't going to fix any of that. And so once I realized I didn't want to go to Starbucks as much anymore, 2017, I cut it down to 1 day a week. And by halfway through 2017, I stopped doing that too. I was just making coffee at home. Because it turns out the coffee I make at home, it's tastier than the stuff they give you at Starbucks. And it's not close. No cap on that. No cap on my pour over. Thank you. No lid either. It's a pour over. See? But that's the point. It's looking at that and going, you know, I don't need that anymore. I'm going to put that money right back in my pocket. But I did that not by just saying, oh, I want to save more money. That isn't enough. Everyone wants to save more. That's literally top three every single year in terms of New Year's resolutions. Last year, mental health was the big one. This year, physical health. But number two, money. I want better finances. What the heck does that mean? It means you have to change your attitude when it comes to how you use your money. You earn your money, and now what are you going to do with it? I want to save it. Then what are you going to do? Then I'm going to change my lifestyle so more of that money stays in my pocket, which means what? I'm making my coffee at home. I'm going to have the Jimmy Dean sandwich. In fact, I know I'm going to make scrambled eggs here after this. I'm going to do scrambled eggs, and I have some leftover bacon. But bottom line is that I'm definitely not going out and spending 10 or 15 bucks on breakfast every single day. I'm also not letting the office or my office mates. Now, granted, when you work virtually, you don't necessarily have office mates. But I'm not going to let other people dictate whether I go out for a lunch or whether I have lunch brought in. Now, one of the fun things that I see happen in the office is the idea that every time someone different pays, and so you're only buying lunch once every couple of weeks, but you're having it brought to you 3, 4, 5 days a week, and you are paying for it. I think people use this as a form of like a mental avoidance of the fact that they're eating out virtually every single day. They don't want to face up to the fact that maybe perhaps that consumption's too high. Maybe perhaps we should be bringing something in from home. Or if you forget to bring something in from home, because there's a plan A, bring something from home. And then there's the plan B of, well, what if I forget my lunch? Because that's another one that happens. Oh, I forgot it. And then, oh, I forgot it again. Well, I want you to have a plan B in the office. And that might be a can of Chef Boyardee or microwavable soup or something you keep in the work refrigerator or freezer, your Hot Pockets or whatever. Doesn't have to be anything particularly good. Maybe you keep, some PB&J and some crackers or some bread handily stored, be like, okay, I forgot my lunch, it's like going to school and being like, if you forgot your lunch, you don't get the hot lunch with the pizza. They give you the peanut butter sandwich. You're like, crap. They're not going to reward you for forgetting the thing you were supposed to take from home. They're going to give you a thing you're going to be like, peanut butter sandwich, that doesn't sound that great. Where's the jelly? Where's it? Nope. You're getting something that puts something in your stomach. That's it, kid. Here's your PB&J. Here are your carrot sticks and celery. Here's your milk. Go sit down. Oh, I don't like that. Well, then bring your lunch. Similarly, don't make the work reward so good that you're like, boy, I want to forget my lunch every day. But it is, and it's not to say, again, it's not to say don't ever go out for lunch. But it is to say, do I need to go 4 times a week? Can I cut that back to 2? Do I want that money back? And that's just it. It's making those types of decisions and then consistently looking at your credit card statements, looking at your banking accounts, making sure you're actually doing that thing. Are you really living that way? And looking at that scoreboard. This is one of the strengths that we have of having a wealth building platform is that we, on our wealth building platform, when we're working with clients, we look at that together. We look at that spend together. We look at, are these numbers and is this behavior changing? We talk about behavior and lifestyle. I'm not looking at just going, oh, your number was over. Your number was under. Ultimately, it does come down to that at the end of the day. The scoreboard does not lie in that regard. But there can be some context. I see people sometimes beat themselves up. Oh, my food spend was high, but I had to travel to visit my parents, and we had an emergency. And this, no, I'm not talking about fighting an emergency. Although if you have consistent emergencies, you probably need a plan. I'm not talking the one-off. We had a bad month, but when you're consistently as a lifestyle pounding down the takeout, don't expect to have much left to save at the end of the day. Because of all the discretionary, spend, like I said in that data earlier, we're talking, you're talking on 50% of it already being accounted for by housing and transportation, much of which is immovable. If you add personal insurance and pensions, another 12%, you're at 62%. Healthcare is another 8%, that's 70%. So there's 70% of household expenses are fairly fixed. You can't get around most of that, or if you do, it's a moderate adjustment, short of a massive lifestyle change. Like I said, if you decide to cohabitate with other, there are ways of cutting the housing costs down or the transportation down, but they require massive changes in how you live, much more so than simply saying, I'm going to eat more at home. Now, if you're listening and go, but Stephen, I don't know how to cook. I'm afraid of cooking. That's understandable. And so to that end, in terms of what I would suggest, one of the first things I would suggest, and one of the things I love, is what's called the slow cooker. Slow cooker is awesome because you can put food into it for a recipe. It takes 10 minutes, usually. I don't do slow cooker things that take any more than that. But typically, I throw these ingredients in, set it on low, leave, come back, it's done. You want to make cheesy, you know, bacon potato soup? We were just talking about that upstairs here a couple of minutes ago with one of my house, you know, my guests here at the house. And yeah, we're going to do that probably tomorrow. Cheesy bacon potato soup. Perfect for a winter day, especially in the Midwest. Love that. You know, but if you want to make chili, if you want to sit there and do some sort of barbecue rib, want to fall off the bone ribs? You can put that thing in there all day with some barbecue sauce and some broth. Oh man, you're going to get some tasty ribs when you get done. Make sure there's some good seasoning on there. But you get some stuff there and done, excellent. There are lots of ways to get around this. You just have to decide, I'm willing to learn a few new things. And learning a few things, it does not mean you have to become a Food Network star chef. It does not have to mean that you have to be Michelin star quality restaurant, whatever. And in spite of yours truly enjoying cooking, it's not how I can eat every single day. I try to prepare good food, but I also try to shortcut things too because I don't have infinite time. So maybe you're doing some things like you buy food from the grocery store. When you get home, prep it. Cut the onions in advance. Cut the mushrooms in advance. Wash the vegetables in advance. I'm a big fan of carrots and celery sticks as a form of a snack. So when you get home, trim those up. Take 20 minutes, take a half hour. Once a week and do a little bit of prep. Be amazed how much easier your entire week goes because you're already coming back from the store, so you already have the bandwidth to make those adjustments, then you just need to do it. And maybe you make a couple of easy spends there that make life easier. For example, I'm not a huge fan. One of the things that, can I trim down carrots? Yes. Is it my favorite activity? No. So if you don't have the food processor, maybe you're getting the carrot sticks. You're paying an extra buck a bag for those. Okay. Celery you should be able to clean up easy enough. That's a pretty easy one to break down. I think carrots are harder. Some will argue with me. That's fine. But the bottom line is that you can make these adjustments. They're going to help you eat food that's fresher. You're going to be saving money because it's not that you're going to eat less food. That's not the point. I mean, this isn't the slim fast diet, although dieting certainly can help. But it's also to say you are no longer paying for the convenience of having your food or having your beverage prepared for you. And you're taking that convenience value, you're sticking it right back in your pocket, and you're growing it. And as I just demonstrated with the numbers earlier in the episode, that can mean hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars of savings. If you make several of those Jimmy Dean style adjustments, that can be a big difference in how you live later on, because you are willing to live just a little bit differently today. With that, I want to thank you so much for listening to this week's episode, Food for Thought, and I hope it did give you some food for thought. I hope you catch the other 151 episodes of the Money is Personal podcast. Wherever your favorite podcast is, please leave reviews, like, follow this thing, share it with friends. If you have comments, ideas, suggestions, feel free to email me, Steven, Steven, @BriggsWealth.com. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you have a tremendous week. Be safe, be well, and we'll catch you with a fresh episode next week. Take care, everybody. Thank you for listening to Money is Personal, the Briggs Financial Podcast. Please follow Briggs Financial on Instagram and Facebook for more terrific personal financial stories and ideas. And check out our firm's website at www.BriggsWealth.com to schedule a free consultation. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results. This information is provided for informational and educational purposes only. Briggs Financial believes the information has been obtained from sources considered to be reliable, but does not guarantee the accuracy of the information being provided. This information is not meant to be a complete summary or statement of all available data for making financial or investment decisions, and does not constitute a recommendation. Please note that the information provided may include references to concepts that have legal, accounting, and tax implications. It is not to be construed as legal, accounting, or tax advice, and is provided as general information to you to assist in understanding the issues discussed. This information is not meant as a financial or investment advice pertaining to your personal situation. The selection of appropriate investment or planning options and or strategies should be made on an individual basis after consultation with appropriate legal, tax, or financial advisors. Nothing contained herein is intended as a solicitation or an offer to buy or sell any product or service mentioned, and they may not be suitable for all investors.